Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Welcome to the Expressive Arts Collective, where we shoot the shit about mental health, creativity, and anything else that's on our minds.
Yes.
So we are your hosts. I'm Sue Gauthier Penn. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist and expressive arts therapist.
And I am Christian Starnes, licensed marriage and family therapist. And I do a lot with dreams and creativity for your sadness. I'm going to put that on a shirt or a pillow for my sadness too. I don't know.
So
write that down.
So we were going back and forth about what we wanted to talk about today. Mm. And I was talking with my family last night about what should we talk about. And they threw out the idea of talking about pop culture references to therapists that are on TV shows and movies. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yes, this is something I definitely could talk about for a whole hour.
Yeah.
Something I'm very passionate about. Because some are good, some are bad, and some are just, like, so terrible. If that was happening in real life, you'd run away.
Yeah, yeah. Is it, agree. And then, is it wrong that sometimes when I'm watching a TV therapist, I go, ooh, that was really good. Oh, I should do that. I should write that down. Because I think sometimes they can get it right.
Mm-hmm.
But the purpose is, you know, comedy or drama. So they're... has to either they're going to push the story along
mm-hmm.
or they're going to be part of the conflict, which ironically therapists are
mm-hmm.
in real life, mm-hmm. but usually less intentional, I guess, is the difference. And then we'll go into more specifics, but it's just funny. Yeah. Like clearly some, oh God, that's so unethical. That's bad. Oh, I'm so glad they're doing this in imaginary life. and then also a little, can we rewind that so I can write that down? That was a good phrasing.
Yes. and I've been thinking about different TV shows and different therapist characters. And there's definitely somewhere I feel the same way. I'd be like, wait, rewind. That was a really good comment or a really good challenging question. Yeah, we'll get into it.
Mm-hmm.
We also have Paige with us.
Hi, Paige.
Hi, good morning.
Do you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. So I am Paige Polonis. I am the executive director of City Heart, and I'm a student pursuing a master's degree in marriage and family therapy. So super excited to chat with you both.
Yes.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you for jumping in.
Mm-hmm.
So when my family threw out the idea last night, I was like, ooh, yeah, this is going to be good. Because last week, I taught a class at Chapman University to beginner therapists about expressive arts therapy. And they were all like, oh my gosh, I didn't know this is what therapy could look like.
Right.
It's so out of the box. I thought therapy had to look like, you know, two butts in a chair. And I was like, no.
Therapy's in all kinds of different.
There's so many different ways.
Horsey sometimes.
I know. There's,
I love that one. Horse therapy. Equine. Equine. I don't know how to say it. I say horsies.
Horsey therapy. Yeah. And there's animal therapy. Like, we've got a cute little doggo at mm-hmm. our feet today. Little Phoebe. Little pet therapy happening.
Yes.
While talking this morning.
Side note, I have ADHD also. But
me
horsey.
Too.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Horsey therapy. I remember I said that to someone one time and they went, it took them probably like 10 minutes to finally ask, do you do therapy for horses? I was like, no, but I see why it sounded like that. I guess I could. Would that be rehabilitation specialist? But no, there's different experiential therapies that involve horses with the humans. It's really great.
And getting up, moving your body,
mm-hmm.
talking to empty chairs.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we'll get into it talking about kind of like, I have a whole thing that I want to talk about around experiential therapy.
Ooh,
and how they've been portrayed on TV shows.
Yes.
So I taught this class talking to these beginner therapists. Okay. They're like, oh my God, I didn't know therapy could look all these different ways. And then that paired with the conversation last night, I was like, I wonder for folks who have never been to therapy,
oh God, yeah.
What do they think therapy must look like? And then, is their only idea of therapy what they see on TV and movies?
Yeah.
In which case, yikes.
Yeah. And this is when we get into a paradoxical conundrum because representation matters
Absolutely.
In a whole, especially with personal demographics to mm-hmm. see ourselves, to see our neighbors, to get an idea. But we also have to remember this is all fictionalized. Reality TV is not real. Mm-hmm. You know, it's never been. It's not like we turn something on and away we go. There's intention, do-overs, all that jazz. So same thing with, even if it, I've seen some, what is it? There was some reality TV shows with some therapists on it, like episodes of therapy happening with the people. I think Vanderpump Rules, I won't go into the details of that aspect, but I have a fun story.
Like those dating shows where they bring in therapists.
Yes.
And like, what is that? I don't know, 90 Day Fiancé or 60 Day Fiancé.
Married at First Sight.
Yeah. And then they bring in a couple therapists to be like, you have issues. Like, well, okay, you have issues.
Yeah. And I'm always kind of like, does it just say MFT or PhD and they don't have the L, which means you're licensed? Hashtag Dr. Phil. Not licensed. Hasn't been since the 70s.
Really?
He lost his license for some stuff that you can Google. Yeah. So that's another, I mean, Dr. Laura.
That is illegal to misrepresent yourself as a psychotherapist mm-hmm. without having the training and the license behind it. So if somebody's calling themselves a therapist, my friends, and they don't have a clinical license.
Yeah, clinical
or
license.
Unless they're an LMFT, LCSW, LPCC, they're not a real therapist. And that is illegal for them to be advertising themselves as such.
And doing emotional processing. So that's the difference also with coaching and therapy, which both are helpful, but I have clients as a therapist who want some coaching stuff, and I'll tell them, I'm like, okay, so that's going to make our dynamic and relationship very different. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of kind of figuring that out, negotiating, and also even referring out, not mm-hmm. to say that you can't kind of do certain abilities, but
There are more theoretical orientations that kind of lend themselves, like solution focus lends itself sort of more to that coaching.
Yeah, very much.
Whereas, you know, like psychodynamic and,
you
know, we're getting into it.
Yeah.
Humanistic, we're getting into it.
Yeah. So there's a whole world of therapy, information under the word therapy umbrella that TV does not always get to.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And this morning as I was getting ready to come here, I was thinking about just how complex the therapeutic process actually is, not just for the client who's coming to therapy, but also for the therapist who's providing therapy. I think maybe people think, oh, it's just you listen and then you give some advice or you know, do some reflective listening, but it's so much more than that, which is why you want to be seeing someone who is trained, who has supervision, who's, you know.
Yeah, California, it's hard when it's you, the therapist, going through this, but I do respect and appreciate the fact that it's mandatory 3,000 mm-hmm. hours.
Absolutely.
And the minimum, if you're working your ass off full time and then some, which a lot of times you don't get paid, but that's another story. It takes 3 years. Mm-hmm. And that's why a lot of times you'll see an associate, and maybe they've been doing this for like 6 years or more. They just are getting more of those hours and it takes time. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I always make the joke, it is exhausting to look this calm.
And it took a lot of training to look this
Yes, old. You know, because we're not robots, we're people, and it's like, it really, this is a good topic for another day too, but all the kind of ins and outs, I just think of it like with Wizard of Oz, like behind the curtain, there's all this happening, because I care about what someone's saying, but you can't. You also do all these emotional, internal, mental, physical gymnastics.
Yes.
I'm very somatic, so I'm shuttling up and down in myself, mm-hmm. picking up on the other person in the room, that mm-hmm. energy, even through Zoom. I pick that up, or the mirroring neurons, or do the whatevers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, what were you going to say, Sue, about?
Oh, ADHD, my brain is already on a different thing. What I was going to say, come on, brain, come on back.
Mental gymnastics.
Oh, yes.
Okay, performance.
So you're very somatic. I'm very image oriented.
Ooh,
right? So the image that comes to me is having to do cartwheels.
Oh, yeah, 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 cartwheels, yeah.
It's like mental and emotional cartwheels, sitting in the chair looking very calm and grounded, and being able to still listen while doing gymnastics in my brain.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And the images also, which is, we'll get into that, I forget what it's called in the moment, but that is a form of connected to psychodynamic, psychoanalytic.
You're talking about active imagination?
Therapy. No, they kind of talk about like a third in the room, where the client will be talking, experiencing something, the therapist will receive the information through maybe an image or something, a story or something that kind of literally just kind of comes to them. And then when they share it, the client's like, oh my God, that's exactly how it feels. Mm-hmm. And it's got a word and I forget what it's called, but it's cool. It sounds like magic, but it's not. This is a part of your day-to-day experience with others. It's just noticing and having awareness.
Yes.
Yeah.
I know what you're talking about, but I also don't know the Klingon word. Christian's going to look it up for us.
Oh, yeah.
So that we can be fancy and use clinical words as clinical professionals.
And it's also a fun, it's just fun. I think it's, yeah.
The other thing I was going to say that, and I want to circle back and get to talking about the TV shows and stuff, but what you don't see in TV shows and that, like, behind, was it the wizard? Was it behind the curtain?
The man behind the curtain, which was the wizard.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Is that therapists also have to pay attention to things like transference, counter-transference, all that jazz. And I think in TV shows, they don't really talk about that. And then you see therapists acting on the transference and counter-transference, which sometimes is good and sometimes is not good, which we will talk about.
Yes.
Did you find the word?
No.
Paige?
The word for what?
When the client is sharing and then the therapist gets the image and then shares the image and then the client is like, yes, that's it.
Oh. I would just probably have thought that was like a form of active listening, like reflecting.
Right, or some kind of like intuitive process, right? Like,
yeah, it's got a fun word. And it's, yeah, but it's kind of like picking up on this kind of other level of consciousness together, mm-hmm. that you're both like in that groove.
Oh, is it co-transference?
No.
Because that's a thing too, co-training.
I'm one term in, guys. I will keep my eyes and ears open.
Yes.
we'll be months into this and then people will be like, I figured it out.
It's good. It's good. Also, any listeners wanna
call in.
That, call in.
Call in or text us. What is that called?
Oh man. Anyways.
Anyway, shall we get into talking about some pop culture references to therapy and some TV shows?
Yes.
Okay. Where do you want to start? You want to start with the good, the bad, or the ugly?
Is there any good ones?
There are some good ones. In my opinion, I think the best, like, kind of current portrayal of a therapist is in Netflix show Never Have I Ever, Niecy Nash's character. She's a clinical psychologist, I think. But the way that she interacts with the main character of Never Have I Ever is so warm, and she uses humor. And then she uses Adlerian feather hammer, the feather hammer where, like, you have this, like, great rapport, you're able to be very, like, loving with your client, and that trust is built. So then Niecy Nash, like, drops the hammer and,
right.
like, calls the client out on their bullshit, and then the client's like, oh shit. But the client listens because they have this gorgeous rapport,
right.
And Niecy Nash just, like, keeps it real. But she has boundaries. The client kind of can get a little excited and sometimes wants to cross boundaries. And Niecy Nash's character is really good at, like, kind of reeling the client in, reestablishing boundaries, but in this really loving, kind, warm, funny way. And I just adore the way that character is written.
Yeah.
Because it reminds me of how I do therapy with my clients. There's boundaries, there's a container. But I adore my clients, and I get excited with them, and I want to, like, celebrate their wins. And then when it comes time to, like, talking about the real shit, and sometimes I have to say some challenging stuff, that container is already built, so it's easier to call out the bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
So I really appreciate the way that the character's written. Mindy, do we know Mindy's last name? The writer of, like, the Mindy Project?
Mindy Kaling? Yeah.
So she wrote Never Have I Ever.
Mm-hmm.
So
I didn't know that.
She presumably wrote that character in, and I just think it's a beautiful portrayal of what therapy can look like.
Yeah. I've seen some of that. Well, I've seen more than some of that show, actually. I think I need to see the most current season. But I do remember, yes, Nisha's character, and being impressed with her energy. Because it is something that you have to be aware of in person or through, you know, telehealth, if it's, you know, video or audio, of that mirroring, but also, yeah, the words they use, the boundaries, and it's positive, but also being able to go in there straight on with some truthful observation. You know, boundaries don't have to hurt, and we don't have to like them, but boundaries aren't ultimatums, so they just kind of are what they are. And even though I know with, like, the main character, she's in high school and really wanting to connect, and I think from what I remember is, yeah, her therapist's character is accessible, but you definitely can feel like, I'm an adult, and I have the boundaries, and you can trust me. And it's not, it doesn't have to be said, you can trust me, it's something that I feel, and that's something also you can explore with your therapist when you don't feel that.
Yes, and if you don't feel that, would highly recommend that you do talk to your therapist about it. I've talked to a lot of clients where, you know, in previous therapist-client relationships, they didn't talk about when it didn't feel right or when they felt like it wasn't a good fit. And I always encourage them, like, if something isn't feeling right, if something isn't settling, let's talk about it.
Yeah.
We don't want us to sweep it under the rug, and we want to have authentic, real conversations.
Yeah, because, you know, it's... can be uncomfortable, again, uncomfortable doesn't equal bad.
No.
I always tell clients, you know, there's going to be times when you're going to be mad at me, and I may be mad at you, and we both can talk about it or have some sort of way of working with that.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I get, like, mad at clients per se, but it's
irked, like, because we're humans, you know.
And, you know, if something comes out a little heavy, it's like, I like it. I appreciate it when clients go, oh, I don't know if what I'm saying has come across. I was like, oh, tell me, how were you experiencing me in that moment? Because sometimes it could be something that they said made me go, oh no, I don't know if that's in line with what is congruent to what they were saying they wanted in their life. So they're, you know, but then they're perceiving it like judgment when it's more of an anxiety of, oh, I hope that works out well or something, you know?
Yeah, totally.
And you never, so I give those examples because when do you ever get to safely ask somebody or go, I'm afraid you're judging me or my feelings are hurt or I don't know if this or that. And you get to work it out because odds are it's happening other places in your life. Mm-hmm. Hashtag why we go to therapy.
Mm-hmm. Because oftentimes the patterns that are happening in your life outside of therapy, they're going to mimic themselves in the therapy room. And it's a beautiful opportunity to work through that with someone who you've built that rapport with and you have those boundaries with and, you know, hopefully trust has been established. I get very excited when, well, I don't know if excited is the right word. I recognize it as a sign of progress when my clients do say, hey, Sue, you hurt my feeling, or hey, that didn't land well. I'm like, we're having a real, like, authentic conversation, and they're saying something that's really hard for them, and this might be the first time that they've been able to confront someone in their life. And I'm like, yes, progress. And then, you know, and then we do the reparative work. That offers a different experience, which ultimately that's what we're trying to do in therapy, is have those reparative moments, you know, of how relationships can look, how conversations can look, different.
Yeah. And it usually, like, as hard as it is in those moments, I find that after that, the therapeutic relationship, at least when I've been working with people, it just feels even, it's like the elephant in the room of whatever that discomfort or fear is. It's like, okay, we got it out of the way. And people are a lot more relaxed and open.
Mm-hmm.
And I get
it strengthens the relationship. Yeah. I mean, that's hopefully what happens when we have hard conversations with folks who can be open and receptive and curious, is, you know, that it strengthens mm-hmm. the relationship.
And when it doesn't, is when you go, oh, maybe there's something more to this. Maybe this relationship isn't working or fostering exactly what I want. Or maybe there's more that I need to explore and discuss. And I always think of it like when something like that goes really well, it's such a great template. It's very experiential. It's like I was able to say I was really hurt or you pissed me off or whatever it was, mm-hmm. you know, to
fuck you to
my therapist. And we were able to talk about it and they didn't attack me and they did blah, blah, blah. And they were, you know, blah, blah, blah. So when I go into my real life and I try to go, hey, can I talk to you about something with somebody in my life? And they're like blowing up or whatever. It's like, whoa, there's another way that this could go.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's also the value of, they call them reparative experiences in therapy, that a therapist is like, not always, but the goal is to be at least two steps ahead to see, like, we might be going there, and so that you can kind of prepare and set the stage in an appropriate way for that interaction, because it's all reparative in so many ways,
mm-hmm.
which can also lead us to the bad.
Before we get to the bad, Paige, we got any thoughts on Never Have I Ever. Have you seen it?
Oh, yeah.
I haven't seen it, but I know, I think what you guys are talking about, just the idea that, like, as the client, it's okay to share when something's not working.
Yeah.
That's something for sure I think would be beneficial if that were more present in pop culture, in film, and in the portrayals of the therapeutic relationship, because I didn't know that you could do that until I went to school and started learning, like, this is what you want your clients to do. And I've participated in a lot of therapy, and every time, like, just, you know, you go through a pattern of feeling like, oh, maybe it just doesn't work. Maybe it's just not for me.
Mm.
But really, it's just, I think, a lack of understanding that it's supposed to be for you. So yeah, you have agency to share when something's working and when something's not, and actually it's to your benefit.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be really helpful. If that were portrayed more in mainstream media.
For sure. So to the bad, or wait, can we talk about the iffy?
Oh, the in-betweenies?
Yeah, because I've got some iffies.
Okay, yeah, give me some iffies.
Okay, I adore this show, but there are a lot of ethical issues.
Oh, yes, I think I know.
Shrinking.
Oh, it's such a good show.
It is such a good show. It's on Apple TV. It's with Jason
Segel
and Harrison Ford. And it is so good. If you are a therapist or, like, you know, in the helping profession, highly recommend you watch it, because you will feel seen.
Yeah, it's very cathartic.
And understood. However, there are definitely, definitely some issues with it.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say Jason Segel's, like, the main character? Or do you think the whole, like, all the people in the group practice are main characters?
Yeah, I think it's an ensemble, but it starts with the focus very much being around him and coming back to him. So I think it's safe to say he's the lead.
Mm-hmm. At least maybe in the first season, he's kind of the lead. Where was I going with that?
Well, probably, like, how
my brain is gone.
Well, he's going through some personal
grief. He's grieving the loss of his wife.
His own, probably, I would, if I were to analyze him, his own sense of self-identity shifts and changes. Where do I fall in and exist in the world? And feeling powerless.
Mm-hmm. So he's kind of having an existential crisis a little bit,
mm-hmm.
which grief often leads us to.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Come to find out.
Yeah.
And and you know, he goes to work, everything's kind of falling apart, it feels like, and he seems to appear to feel pretty useless even as a therapist, just having all the existential, what am I doing, is there any purpose?
Mm-hmm. And he's struggling with the relationship with his teenage daughter, mm-hmm. and like, mm-hmm. how do I be dad to her? And yeah, I think there's a little bit of identity crisis there as well.
And I think instead of really sitting with his own issues and working through them, he finds some escape that gives him some positive sense of control, optimism, and so forth, but it's very one-sided, and that's where it becomes problematic. He's not mm-hmm. borrowing that I'm good as a therapist. This is, I'm really connecting to help him kind of go through and deal with his own shit. Mm-hmm. Instead, it's lopsided of, my life is shit right now. You know what, though? I'm going to fix everybody else's life. And mm-hmm. then all of that, and he breaks all of these boundaries.
So I have a couple of thoughts on this. So one, recognizing that therapists are human and they're often going through their own process. We show up calm, collected, really good listeners. And at the end of the day, we often have our own shit that mm-hmm. we're going through. And part of our training is that when our shit hits the fan, we need to be reaching out for supervision, consultation. We need to go to therapy ourselves to deal with our stuff so that we don't end up doing what Jason Mitchell does and breaks all the boundaries and all the rules. And yeah, really.
Yeah. Like,
yikes.
If you haven't seen it, it's really fun. And also, it's fun, but at times.
Wait, it's like cringy, but it's like the, I don't know if this is a great example, but it's like the car crash that you can't look away from.
Yeah, the rubbernecking of, what I want to see. And,
yes.
And it's dramatic, and, you know, there's some moments in it that are, I think, truthfully helpful. Verbal, therapeutic, whatever it may be, of exploration, but it's cute as well and all that stuff. But yes, it definitely not a realistic interpretation of what to do and so forth. And his, what is it, probably like the group owner or the head guy that's, you know, been doing this the longest, Harrison Ford, is trying to tell Jason Segel, like, okay, you're overstepping boundaries, you're enabling, you're doing this. Now, what would happen in real life would be, you can't do that. I'm going to write you up. You're not allowed to see.
Well, and clients, I'm going to report you.
Yeah.
And he'd probably lose his license or have his license suspended and then be forced into like
therapy, all and kinds review. Of things.
Yeah, he would, if that was to happen in real life and the.
Because it's set in California.
The group practice owner knew, he'd be written up in a heartbeat, probably fired, mm-hmm. and then would be reported to the BBS. And what other boards he might be a part of.
Yeah.
That shit would not fly.
No.
But it makes for good TV.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anything else about shrinking? Oh. Okay. Have you watched the whole way through yet?
No.
Oh. I
saw past the engagement.
I haven't watched it at all.
You haven't watched it at all. Okay.
But ooh. I've been wanting to. It looks amazing.
It's so good. Okay, without giving it away, towards the end of the season, he kind of gives some advice that is taken way too literally that then gets a client in some hot water. It's a big, big trouble, and it... In real life, this would come back to him, and this is a lose your license moment. Mm. So that's something else, like being really careful with how we give advice, like really not giving advice, helping the client figure out what they need, and empowering them to find that out for themselves instead of giving advice for this reason. And also just being real careful that clients don't take things too literally.
Mm.
So I can't tell you how many times I've checked in and been like, wait, I meant that as a joke.
Oh my gosh,
do not do that. Don't do that. And they're like, yes, Sue, I know. I'm like, but do you?
Do you?
Do you?
Do you? Because I've seen some things. I've read some case studies.
I've sometimes seen some shit go down.
Have you seen shrinking? I've seen some things. Oh, side note, reverie. That's the word.
Reverie.
Yep, it is a psychoanalytical theory word. So reverie, sometimes you'll hear out in the ether, but in a psychoanalytic, Freud used it as a state reached by the analyst. In which they have a deeper comprehension and interpretation of the client's experiences by allowing the occurrences of daydreaming episodes.
Got it.
Within oneself. And so, for me, I feel like it's like a switch that I can turn on, probably because I've been daydreaming my ass off since I was a kid. And, and it can becomes kind of this energetic kind of exchange between the therapist and the client, where in the middle is this reverie, this daydream where you kind of pick up on each other and kind of can go back and forth even as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so reverie. It's also a sexy, fun word.
No, it is. Maybe I should name my practice reverie.
Yeah.
Reverie collective.
Just a daydream or a call away.
Yeah. Do you want to say anything more about Jason Segel's character around transference and countertransference?
The things that we kind of discussed and listed are, kind of express that. So, you know, transference would be as a client, let's say therapist goes, well, it sounds like you're working really hard on a lot of things, like something that could be a positive, but is a little bit of a neutral, just kind of in there, but the client maybe doesn't realize that they might be transferring. Like, what does that mean? I'm doing well with that. Like, are you implying I should be doing better? Which might be coming from, and jump in case I'm not giving a clear example of like, okay, now here's this transference from my mom who used to always make these passive aggressive comments about my efforts. And so I'm getting a feeling as a client like, oh, you're judging me.
And that, giving me mom energy.
Yeah. So the transferring of energy or transferring of a relationship that is not happening in this moment in the room,
mm-hmm.
or a feeling, right? And then the therapist can also have what's called counter transference, which happens all the time in our lives as walking around, right? The guy that cuts you off at the gas station, it's like, screw you. And then they lean out their window and it's an old lady going, I'm sorry. And you're like, oh shit. Right. And so a way to kind of work with that in the room as a patient, a client, is the therapist bringing up, I wonder if there was a sense of judgment that you might have felt coming from me. Now we're working with the transference. Not every therapist is trained in that. Now,
right.
Can
I just say my favorite thing to do there? Because I can sense when I have poked the bear a little bit, right?
Yeah. The shutdown can kind of happen.
Yeah, I can sense when that transference is coming up. And then I'll say, ooh, we just stepped in it, or I just stepped in it. What just happened there? Like, what do you make up about what I said? What just got triggered for you? Like, we pause everything and we process right then and there to really get to the heart of what was that transference about? And then we talk about it.
Yeah.
Which I know you do that too.
Yeah. And it's hard to catch it all the time.
Yeah.
I've had counter transference. And what's helpful as a therapist is, again, all these things are normal, regular human emotions and experiences, but it's funny. I always make a joke too of like, you know, we're not making t-shirts here. It's not, you know, just show up, boom, we're done. There is you, the person, and then there's you, your job, and they bleed together. And so being able to set internal boundaries, which is crazy learning curve as a human who didn't grow up learning what the hell a boundary was till they're in their 20s. Speaking about me, I'm sure I was doing them or somewhere. I'm still alive, so something good must have happened. But I was like, wait a minute, what? To one of my first therapists out here, Bridget, hashtag. I was like, a boundary is what now? But yeah, that counter transference where you might, as a therapist, get offended or you think I'm stupid or I'm not judging, like, oh, wait, who in me is getting provoked? who am I getting reminded of? And that's when we go inside. And that's what also I mean when it looks, it's very exhausting to look that relaxed, because if you notice you get triggered or something goes, oop, I stepped in, or they stepped in my thing. They're not the therapist. It's not their job to regulate and make sure that I'm okay. It's my job. And so, again, seeking, you know, supervision, therapy, chatting it over with somebody outside of, to get to the heart of it so that it goes away.
And what that models is sort of a healthy parent-child dynamic.
Yes.
That the child doesn't need to be checking in with the parent and, like, soothing the parent. It's the parent's job to, like, learn how to regulate and then go do their work elsewhere to keep the child-parent dynamic. Which is what? Psychodynamic? Is that, or is that an attachment? What do we call that?
Yeah, attachment's a part of psychodynamic.
Is that like an attachment lens?
Yeah, I would say. Yeah, very attachment kind of. And if you want to Google again, Winnicott, Melanie Klein,
Object relations.
Object relations, Cohut, self-psychology.
Oh, Cohut. I forgot
mirroring,
about
parent imago.
Yes.
All that good stuff.
Oh, man.
It was a very, very exciting moment to watch. It's so exciting.
Do.
Spitting out the terms.
And those ones, they're like, yeah, it happens all the time. And that's what's exciting also about psychology. When you get to know what's happening, it's not just conversation. It's a positive manipulation of an experience. And I forget what's a positive reframe of that. But it is of, and it's truthful because it all exists at the same time.
Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Yeah.
It's not just two people and two butts in a chair.
No.
Two butts and chairs. It's so much more than that.
Oh yeah.
All right, shall we move on? So that's shrinking. Highly recommend.
Mm-hmm.
Highly recommend Never Have I Ever as well. So, have you seen, I think it's called Nine Strangers. I think it was on Hulu.
Oh my God.
With
Nicole
Kidman.
I forgot about that one. Yes.
Okay, this is another one that came out, I don't know, within the last year or two, or maybe during pandemic time. Nicole Kidman, I'm pretty sure it's on Hulu. The idea is that it's like a couple's retreat experience, or like a couple's retreat intensive type thing. And this is mostly bad, but I think there is some good.
Yeah.
Okay, the mostly bad, well, no, the really bad, is that these couples go to this retreat, and then they get dosed with either shrooms or LSD without their consent.
Yeah, so that's really bad.
That's bad. That is totally illegal, should lose your license, do not go to a therapist who has a history of doing that. But here's where I think it gets interesting, is that some of the interventions that they do at this couples retreat is actually very experiential, and I use some of these. But in the show, they make them seem really scary because, one, they're high on some kind of psychedelic. Two, they play big scary music behind it, and they make it seem like, oh my God, like, what's going to happen? But if I remember correctly, there's a scene where they kind of do like an empty chair or almost like a psychodrama where they're talking to like a statue and they're like, you know, externalizing all their stuff with like statues or something like that. And I was like, that is very much like empty chair, gestalt work. That's very similar to Marino's psychodrama. And those are techniques that I totally use in therapy, but nobody is high and there's not big scary music playing in the background.
Yeah, and no one is getting dysregulated to the point where it's not feeling contained or helpful.
Exactly.
I think, what's the one guy's, his real name? I can't remember the character, but he plays the former football player. And him and Melissa McCarthy's character hang out a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he is not in a place a lot of those times that a therapist would push and keep it going. He's in that window of tolerance where you can get a real big, like, somebody on, you know, breaking down and crying and, you know, you know, big feelings aren't bad, but yeah, he gets to a point to where I don't know if it's, it looks a little dangerous for him and others involved.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's where this one is like mostly bad. But
and they're high. So what are you going to do?
And they're high. But I like the use of the experiential work in that. But I don't appreciate that the writer of that made these sort of out of the box therapy seem scary.
Yeah.
Because they actually can be really powerful and transformative in people's lives. But if shows continue to show that kind of work as really scary, dangerous even, you know, people might shy away from modalities that could be really helpful for them.
Right. And it kind of reminds me of, there was an episode or two of Grey's Anatomy a season or two ago where a character ended up doing EMDR.
Hmm.
And that, I was like, oh, they talk about EMDR, because it had, I love that. Everything's escaping me now. I can kind of hear his name being said by his wife's character, and I can't make it out in my mind. But maybe I'll have a reverie about it later. Owen is his name. Yes, former combat vet. And yeah, he's having PTSD. And so I was glad that they talked about it. They talked about it well. But when I think they went to do it, it wasn't actually EMDR. It was a different bilateral stimulation. It might have been a little bit more brain spotting.
Mm-hmm.
But they got the basic idea across. And again, it's not their job to necessarily be accurate. They're just doing a show, but it really can be like, also as a viewer, like just wanting to know a little bit. I don't mind if they dramatize something, but it's like, oh, is that thing? That's interesting. I want to look into that.
Mm-hmm.
But we're doing like, they're doing like three different things and calling it an actual thing. You know, it's like,
so
it's
on like, the show, they called it EMDR.
Yeah, but it protocol wasn't really that.
Well, and on TV, they might not be able to show the protocol because of NDAs of being trained. So like, I'm trained in accelerated resolution therapy, and I signed some kind of thing where like, I can't demonstrate it because, you know, someone might take it and be like, oh, now I know how to do accelerated resolution therapy, and they don't. So I wonder if it was intentionally written like that.
Oh my gosh.
Interesting. To not show the actual EMDR protocol for fear of someone being like, oh, now I know how to do it.
Right.
So they probably had to change it.
Yeah. Because it was like, it looked like a conglomerate in a way of a lot of different things happening. Mm-hmm. And so that makes more sense. I want to apologize to the writers of Grey's Anatomy season 13 or 12. I'm glad that that's the case then.
Well,
too.
That would be curious, like for writers, here's where the maybe creative twist comes in.
Yeah.
With the writers, how creative can they be, or what are the limitations to their writing because they have to be mindful of stuff like that, you know?
And the way
and so we're pissed off at them, like, who are you? But maybe there's an actual reason for
it. And they did do a really good job of explaining it and giving it definitely a vibe that if you're watching and didn't know about it, you would look into it like, oh, that helps with trauma. So I was like, oh, somebody might have either they heard about it or they've experienced it. But it was written very well. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
I'd be interested in seeing that. Okay, so we covered Nine Strangers, Never Have I Ever, Shrinking, a little bit of Grey's Anatomy.
And The Shrink Next Door.
Okay, Paige, take it away. You know more about this one.
So this one, Paul Rudd and Will Ferrell are in a therapeutic relationship. Paul Rudd is the therapist, and it's not a comedy, although I think it could be classified as like a dark comedy.
Yeah, at times, yeah.
Yeah. So, but over the course of the show, you see that Paul Rudd, the therapist, has like these really, he has no boundaries. I think it's just the way to say it. He has zero boundaries with his clients, and in fact, like, sets up their dynamic so that he's always gaining from it, whether it's monetarily or like just in clout, like being a part of a, he has like these really high, high-end clients. Is that a thing?
Yeah, well, yes, and this is based on a true story, and the actual therapist was Gwyneth Paltrow's therapist for a hot minute, and then some other people in circles.
Wait, pause for a second. Wait, so this Paul Rudd show
is
based on a true story?
Mm-hmm.
With Gwyneth Paltrow's therapist?
That's the real guy there. Next to the Will Ferrell character.
Wait, okay, this just got way juicier.
No, yeah. Next door.
So what happened?
So the main storyline of the show is his relationship with Will Ferrell, who, over the course of the whole show, like, loses touch with his family, loses touch with his, with any community that he had, because Paul Rudd, like, it's like almost just a toxic relationship where he's set it up, like, they're best friends. And Paul Rudd, like, moves into his home at some point.
Yep.
Like, just takes over his whole... He's at one point consulting as a therapist for Will Ferrell's company, which is a family-owned, family-run mm-hmm. company. Paul Rudd's character has, like, a desk and an office space inside of Will Ferrell's business where he's consulting as a therapist for the whole team, but he's, like, doing nothing. He's just collecting a paycheck and advising. It's very bizarre.
There's so much wrong with that.
Yeah, he quote allegedly conned his way into patients' wills.
Stop it.
Yeah.
Wait, that's true.
Yeah, his name's Dr. Ike.
It's bad.
See, yeah.
Oh my god.
Yep. Dr. Ike. It's really taking advantage of someone who is very passive, maybe seems to have what would be a clinically codependent personality mm-hmm. disorder or type. Mm-hmm. And I think everybody hears about Dr. Ike, and they go to the same synagogue and
so
all
there's
this
a
stuff.
Lot of dual relationships happening.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Which is a big no-no.
Mm-hmm.
So this is why dual relationships aren't allowed, because it can really cloud one's judgment. All kinds of power dynamics can happen.
It negates the, as I said earlier, positive form of manipulation, which has had Sue's face. That's also why I said it again. Manipulation is to take something and turn into something and have another experience. I do that all the time with my hair. Yeah, because I'm balding a little. It's testosterone. Anyways, but there's, you know.
You have a thick head of hair.
Thank you.
I
manipulated you into giving me that compliment.
Oh my God, and I fell for it.
And the positive part of it, reframe, there we go, is you feel good about it. And no one got hurt. So thank you. You're welcome.
See, no one got hurt.
So that's kind of like Dr. Ike, but like that was very mild.
and in Dr. Ike's case, people got hurt.
Yes, they did. And like he ended up getting the guy's, his name's Marty, his staying at his like vacation home, throwing parties there, putting pictures of his family on the wall.
Yeah.
Making it seem like it was his place. And so that was also where he got all these pictures with these different celebrities. So I'm not 100% sure if he actually was Gwyneth Paltrow's therapist. I thought I read that. However, he also made it a point to get his picture taken with everybody.
Yeah. Oh.
So, and he ended up getting, I think, I don't know if he went, I don't think he went to jail or anything.
What?
But I know, right?
How did he not go to jail? He had to have lost his license though, right?
He did. It happened to him in real life. Let's see. He was stripped of his medical license. And he lost his appeal to get it back. This was in 2021. But I think it took a while. And that's, doesn't make any sense. I think also this occurred in the 80s. Early 90s, like what happened to Marty that we see in the story. It takes place, I think, in the 80s. And it's... I was watching with my girlfriend, my partner, and she was like, how did he get away with it? How was he allowed? And I was like, one, it was set in New York. I don't know their laws there.
Oh.
But it was also in the 80s. And the dude's a psychiatrist, I believe. So it's like, he's like, which he can do therapy if he's got some like clinical
training. Most psychiatrists do not do counseling of any kind or therapy of any kind. They just talk medication.
Yeah.
So even that's a little iffy.
Yeah.
And so he was like consulting and doing therapy.
Everything.
And, like, that's weird.
Everything. And so that's where I think like part of it was like it was in the gray. During that time, they didn't have as many laws protecting citizens. Mm-hmm. And that's what's nice, too, side note, of like, BBS is the one that's in California.
So, Board of Behavioral Sciences.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're there to protect you, the client, the patient. They really, really are. If there is any form of government entity that is there to protect the population... I mean, I know for certain as being licensed with them, that's what they're there for. And I appreciate that because also being a client, a patient of other people's in the past, it's nice to know that there is an overseeing board that is looking out for people. So if there's issues with dual relationships and boundaries that get really fuzzy, you can always contact them and they'll look into things, which I think is also nice to know. Cause a lot of, I've had some clients in the past who've had some really like detrimental experiences of towing the line between friend and therapist. Mm-hmm. And you know, letting them know this is who you'd want to contact if you feel compelled to share what happened. Mm-hmm. It can be also, that's very empowering too. And then as a therapist, I process that experience with them. Mm-hmm. And that's where, again, these fun words, it can be reparative because God, you go to somebody and going, I really want some help and I'm trusting that you'll be able to offer that. Mm-hmm. And then that's the same entity that causes such distress.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a lot of resources and avenues so that life doesn't end up like it did for Marty.
Yeah.
Marty ended up getting very empowered at one point, though, and put his foot down and stopped it.
Good.
Yeah.
Go
and held
Marty.
Him accountable. So, yes, go Marty. But in the midst of it, he lost so much time with his sister and nieces and nephews. It reminds me a lot of with the Beach Boys, Brian Wilson. Mm-hmm. Different presenting clinical like disorders. Brian Wilson's mental health journey is very different, it appears, from Marty's, but they both were taken advantage of these, you know, Spengali guru-y. Yeah, psychiatrist, therapist.
So Brian Wilson was also taken advantage by a therapist?
Oh, man. Yeah, like, I think it was, like, the 70s, 80s. There was, like, forever and a day. He wouldn't go anywhere without this guy. The guy was his, like coach, therapist.
So got him to be very dependent on him?
Exactly. And he was in such a fragile state. He's like, okay. And just kept him, I think, isolated, all this stuff. And, there's, if you watch any little documentaries about Brian Wilson and things like that, he spent a long time without, it seems, getting the correct diagnosis of looks like, I think most recent, possibly like schizoaffective disorder.
Interesting. Okay.
So a little bit of the kind of schizophrenia, a mood disorder, and nothing is a disorder unless it creates disorder for the person. So there came a point where the symptoms got too much without any sort of medical intervention to help him stay a little bit more grounded in his reality. And this guy swooped in. And it sucks, especially when you're famous. There's a lot of yes people around you. Mm-hmm. And the people that really care about you and want to intervene and kind of the best for you aren't allowed into that circle.
Yikes.
A lot of time. Power, money, whatever it is. So,
dang.
And so, to kind of bring it full circle, I encourage everybody to watch a good few episodes of, what is it, Never Have I Ever?
Yes.
To see some Niecy yes. Nash and support. It's also really nice to see a person of color as
Absolutely.
A therapist, especially a female person of color as a therapist,
yes.
done well.
Yes. And I was going to say, I forgot another one. Atypical, another Netflix show.
Yeah.
the therapist in that.
For good things.
It's she's younger, woman of color, and does a really good job. And in that, she gets some ethical choices thrown her way. And I think she does a really good job. And whoever wrote it did a really good job of sort of showing like the therapist process of having to, you know, use all their training to figure out what to do in a situation.
Cool.
And she makes a good choice, I think, you know. But that's another one that I think is a great example where therapy can look like, you know, outside the box.
Yeah.
And where she has to get creative with the main character. And that therapy is a little bit more like life skills, social skills. And that's another really good one.
More actionable.
Yeah.
Support in that way.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
Can we talk about The Real Ugly?
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like this, the one with Paul Rudd.
Yeah, it was Real Ugly. I'm like, is there another one that could be Real Ugly?
Well, so I can't remember all of this show, but I remember watching it and just being horrified, which is Gypsy.
Oh!
Which I think is a
Netflix.
Was it Netflix?
I think so, with Naomi Watts.
Yeah, with Naomi Watts. Scary. Real scary. I'm pretty sure she either sleeps with her clients or she stalks her clients.
Yeah, she like it learns all about their life. I haven't watched it myself, but I'm familiar with it a little bit. I've been scared to watch it.
It's intense.
Yeah, like I'm very sensitive to things now. Being a therapist, like opening myself up, imagining other people's experience. I gotta watch like 90 Day Fiance, or if I watch Dateline, I gotta have somebody there with me. You know. But yeah, she like inserts herself into people's lives, stalks them, follows them. I think that's how she believes probably that, oh, I'm making change. I'm doing something. I'm helping because I'm a direct influence in creating this X, Y, and Z. But it sounds like a really disturbed version of voyeurism.
Yes. Yeah.
Snap. Naomi Watts.
That's
killer.
If you're a therapist, don't do that.
If you're a client with
a therapist like that, run.
Run, don't walk.
Run away and report.
Go to Costco. It's a safe space. It's a safe place.
Or Target.
Nah, depends on who you are.
Okay. I was just thinking that a lot of clients, Target is like their safe space.
Yeah, yeah.
It's so predictable.
Exactly.
But you're right.
I was making a socio-political or a humanistic side joke.
Yes.
But
okay, so we got Gypsy, Ugly.
Yes.
The Real Ugly. And then how about In Treatment?
Ooh.
From like the, I think it was late 90s, early 2000s, HBO show.
Gabriel Byrne's. And then they rebooted it with Uzo Aduba.
Oh, I haven't seen the new version.
I've seen parts of the old one. And then I've seen little clips of Uzo. I love her. So I don't know if she's good at it or not, but I support her.
I have not seen the new version, but I did watch the old version when I was in grad school because I was like, ooh, is this like a good example?
Oh, yeah, we watched an episode in grad school once, too.
Yeah, I think we did, too.
Yeah.
I think some of it's really good. Like, some of the questions he asks are very thought-provoking, and the way he holds space can be good. But in the end, he ends up dating one of his clients and sleeping with her.
No.
Which is a big no-no. Therapy never involves sex.
There's pamphlets, actually.
There's pamphlets.
That two things that I learned from grad school was do not have sex with your clients and take an Uber. Dude, you go out and about, take an Uber. But yeah, the... And I would imagine it makes sense, but to be really, you know, kind of sum up why you don't want to get into a romantic / sexual relationship with your therapist is the power dynamic is not appropriate. You will always be the therapist at some point, like you're in charge. There's a lot of...
You're in charge, you're seen as the expert, you're the wise one.
You're supposed to be safe. And that's breeding ground for a lot of... negative manipulation. That's not that's not going to be beneficial. That's not a good reframe, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. The good thing though about that is that they show him going, he's starting to notice that countertransference, that he likes the client.
Yeah.
That he's like sexually attracted or romantically attracted to the client. And so he does seek out consultation or like supervision with an old supervisor. And that is what we're supposed to do. So I like that they show that, but then he doesn't listen.
Yeah.
And he keeps going and then has this relationship with his client. It's a big no-no.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and that reminds me, one more thing that's really fun is if you do a big no-no like that, right? And you don't, you do that, you don't take an Uber, X, Y, and Z, you can look at the back of, what is it therapist?
Psychology Today.
Psychology Today? Psychology Today magazine, or is it The Therapist?
Oh, maybe it's The Therapist. Because
Psychology Today, you can get out and about.
No, it's The Therapist.
If you ever see a magazine chilling somewhere that says The Therapist, or if you know a therapist that's your friend, and say, do you have that subscription? You get it usually if you're a part of Psychology Today.
Mm-hmm.
In the back of that magazine, it has everybody who's a therapist, who's licensed or whatever.
Who's done no-nos.
Done no-nos in California, and it will have all the deets in there.
You want some tea?
You want some tea?
Go to the back of the Therapist magazine and you will see all the people who have suspended licenses, have lost their license.
Yeah. What they did, what the ramifications are. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It is a shame wagon. But remember,
it puts you on blast.
Yep. I remember starting a law and ethics class that semester. Every day, Bob would read from the back of that magazine to remind us of not the power you wield and the accountability that's at hand. And that, again, uncomfortable, but is necessary because a lot of damage can be done with the role that we're in. Not to say that we have all the answers and we're very powerful. It's what people transfer to us.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be really, that can really fuck up and hurt a lot of people. Yeah. So again, the BBS is there to protect you, the client. And part of that is the Therapist magazine's like, cool, well, we're just going to put that in there too. So, and BBS is like, sounds good. You know?
I guess at the end of the day, because we got to wrap up here.
Yes.
At the end of the day, therapy is much more than just sitting and chatting. There's so much more that goes into it and is involved. It's layered. It's complex. It's juicy. It's beautiful. And sometimes when not done properly, it can cause harm.
Yeah. And when there is discomfort in your own therapy with your therapist, bring that in. And it can just be, I am struggling with this feeling of that you don't like me, or I'm being judged, or do you think I'm stupid? Like, whatever it is. And then when in doubt, also check in with some trusted friends that are like, hey, I feel like I'm not getting this with my therapist or that.
Mm-hmm.
We always recommend bring it up to your therapist. And then also relationship is number one. If you feel like, I'm not flowing with them, I don't feel this great connection, check out a couple others.
Mm-hmm. When you're selecting a therapist, think about it as almost like you're sort of dating, but not dating, because therapy doesn't involve sex.
There's pamphlets.
But you're kind of like courting them to see who's going to be the best fit.
Yeah.
And rule of thumb is that the relationship, the vibe, is the most important part. Therapists can be trained in all different interventions, but if you don't vibe with them, you know, it's not going to be as beneficial. So pick the one that you vibe with most and go from there.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, thank you for listening, folks. We will be back next week to talk more about mental health, creativity, and just shooting the shit.
Yeah.
See you next week. Bye.